And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
"755 is Real" with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to a new edition of 755 is Real. Producer Cam here with you. We have a live room podcast for you guys. Great turnout today in the Athletic app. Excellent questions all around. David and Eric took your questions in real time for those who aren't familiar with the live rooms and answered your Braves-related queries. Make sure you join us in the future in order to find out when we'll be hosting the live rooms. Make sure to find David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL and at EOF34. Also, make sure to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We usually mention when we'll be hosting the rooms. In addition, also go subscribe to us on YouTube. Made a post there this morning about when we would have the live room. So make sure to follow us on all those platforms so you'll be notified when we host the live rooms. As always, thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate the support. And here's David and Eric.
All right, John S., what do you got for us?
Yeah, what are some of your favorite superstitions that guys would have when on a winning streak like you are right now?
Man, it's everything. You know, putting on the certain sock first. For me, it was always I did everything in sets of threes. So if I wash my hands, I grab three paper towels, you know. I mean, it's funny,
OCD, you buy all these things
and then you still give it up, you know, the same and then stick with them. But I kind of stopped being superstitious when I realized it didn't really make a difference. But some guys are religious with them.
Doing everything in threes, isn't that more OCD than superstitious, dude?
I don't know. I did it one time and had a good game and stuck with it my whole career. But I mean, obviously you have bad days too and still keep doing it.
Yeah. I've heard, seen guys do, like you said, just about everything, man. Including guys who take the same route to the ballpark every day, even if it takes them through traffic and they know it or whatever, they have to go the same exact route that they've been on through the street. And obviously eat the same meal every day, you know. Everything.
It only, you know, it turns into a problem when you start accumulating all these things that you have to do perfectly.
Yeah.
You can't pitch well that night. And all of a sudden it turns into, if one thing goes wrong, you start thinking negatively. So gets a little hairy. Jeremy P.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. Dave, I think everybody was scared to come on hearing you, before. I don't want to be the first question with everything that's going on. Schnitt gets a lot of flack, but he moved up several notches in the manager of the year race if he's the impetus for that team meeting that's led the team to go on the winning streak. I mean, I don't think you said a lot about that, Dave. What do you know about that? And is Snicker the one that, was the person who caught everybody together?
Yeah, the reason that I haven't said much about it, because I was going to write about it yesterday, but as it turns out, it wasn't a big deal, because they've won six in a row since, and you can't just totally dismiss it. But it wasn't very interesting in that it was just Schmidt. It was just Schmidt that got up to the ballpark on Wednesday morning in Arizona, and Schmidt called a team meeting. He didn't yell, because when I asked Olson that, he kind of laughed. He said, well, unless you guys know Schmidt better than I, Schmidt's not the kind of guy to do that. So it wasn't yelling or anything like that. All he talked about was, there's a lot of season left, guys. We got to refocus because we're not playing the kind of baseball that we can lately. We're making too many mistakes, shooting ourselves in the foot. We got to be more focused going forward. But he said it in the normal tone of voice and all that. He just kind of, you know, let them know by the sheer fact that he called a team meeting. He let them know there was some urgency. He didn't have to, you know, yell and all, shout and all that. But nobody else spoke. It wasn't like a bunch of players stood up and said, yeah, we got to do, you know, so there really wasn't much to it other than, you know, that you can express in words, you know, other than to get a transcript of what was said. But from everybody I talked to yesterday, that really wasn't a dramatic come to Jesus meeting. You know, it was, hey, let's have a meeting. You guys need to refocus because we're really not playing the kind of ball we're capable of playing. And there's a lot of season left. You know, I don't want to just say it was total coincidence that they've won six in a row since then, but they lost two games in Arizona that they should have won against a pretty mediocre team. And then they went and won the last one, which they, you know, they won easily. They pitched great. They played a great game that day. Best game they played all year, maybe, other than a game against the Dodgers. And then they went to Colorado and pulled off something that they've never done before, and very few teams do, is sweep four from the Rockies. So, you know, but that a lot of the things that were kind of, it was almost like correcting itself in that they got no breaks, and they bullpen collapsed several times in extra innings and all that going up to that. So everything it did in Colorado was kind of the reverse of what had been going on. So I don't know that the team meeting was that big a deal. I think it helped them clear their heads and play a great game against Arizona and get a good flight to Colorado. And they followed that up by doing what they needed to do out there. So we'll see. We'll see. It's obviously going to get a lot of attention if they keep going and this streak really gets long. But we know how fast that can change.
Yeah, for me, I never understand why Snit gets so much flack.
Exactly.
I mean, he's won four straight division titles in a World Series. You know, it's easy to criticize somebody's in-game moves, and most of the time there's something more to it than what you see in a vacuum. But these are the things that make you a great manager, is knowing when to step on the guys, you know, step on the gas a little bit, tell the guys, hey, it's time to kick it into gear. And for me, that was perfect timing because they lost games they should have won. And you can't win divisions and World Series and everything losing games you're supposed to win. So for me, he just had really good timing with that. And what he's best at and what most managers are best at, especially in baseball, is managing the clubhouse. And I think that was just a really good example of it, knowing when to push that button.
Yeah, I think him and Bobby Cox, both are the best trait for both of them. They obviously they did some other things a little differently than each other, but the best trait for both of them, to me, hands down, is that fact that they are such incredible people persons, and they manage a clubhouse with those people skills that they have. They use to so adroitly manage a clubhouse, the two of them. I've never seen anybody manage a clubhouse any better than the two of them. Jim Leland was right there with them as far as that's concerned. But these two guys have really both been great at managing a clubhouse and having guys want to play for you, not turn on you when things go south, you know, not start backstabbing and infighting. And, you know, Joe Maddon got fired yesterday. They had a 12-game losing streak after being the toast of baseball literally 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It looked like Perry was a slam dunk executive of the year. Maddon was probably manager of the year at that point.
Yep.
2 weeks later, he's fired for a 12-game losing streak. The Braves haven't lost more than two in a row this year. So while they had not won more than two in a row before this six-game streak, it's important to note they also haven't lost two in a row, and I think that kind of goes back to having great team chemistry, and things never get ugly in a clubhouse and where guys are pissed off coming to work and don't want to be there.
Yeah, and you set that example as a manager. You know, you have a reliever that blew the game last night, and you walk by him in the hallway, treat him like it's normal. You know, you don't treat guys according to their performance. And what that does is it keeps things from amplifying to the fact that they become a problem. So I think Snit does a great job at that. Bobby would walk by you in a hallway and just tell you way to go. You had no clue what you did. You know, I mean, I haven't pitched in 3 days, and Bobby just walks by in the hallway, way to go, Lo. And you're like, you know, you don't really understand why he's saying that, but it feels a lot better than him not saying hi to you or big leaguing you or something, you know. So Bobby was great at that, and obviously Snit learned a ton from him. So I just think it's a good – this meeting is just another example of him knowing kind of when to get on his guys a little bit and straighten things out, and it paid off.
Hey, there was a question on here. Somebody there's a question that's some not somebody that came on, but somebody that just asked about Michael Harris the second, and whether when Rosario comes back, should Harris keep a center field job? Damn straight.
Yes.
Harris
yes.
plays like this, he's not going ever back to the to the minor leagues. Now, I'm not predicting that he's going to continue to play like this, but he doesn't even have to hit like he's hitting. If he hits 240 and plays the kind of defense we're seeing from him, then he warrants staying in the majors and playing center field every day, because there is nobody on the team that's even close to as good as him in center. Acuna's really good in center, but he's nowhere near in center as good as he is in right, and Acuna's nowhere near as good in center as Michael Harris is. Michael Harris is elite in center field. I mean, we've already seen him save runs, multiple runs, and he's only been out for 10 games.
That catch he made last night.
Oh my God. Phenomenal.
And this is what was great about it, is you could see the flight of the ball and you could see him running after it. You know, a lot of the plays you see, the camera cuts to them and they've already taken 20 steps and you just cut to them laying out and diving. So it looks like a great catch. But what you could appreciate about the catch last night was it was a great route. As soon as the camera switched to him, he was already at full speed, and you could see the flight of that line drive tailing away from him. Yeah. And if you're watching on TV, you're thinking there's no chance he gets to that ball. But because he took a perfect route and he's fast as shit, he runs that thing down. And, you know, if he laid out and made this reaching grab, it'd be all over SportsCenter. But because he's so fast and took a perfect route, that play's going to get way less attention than it deserves. Because I thought there was no chance he was catching that ball off the bat.
Yeah, there was a guy last night that made two great catches that were shown on SportsCenter, and both of them were diving catches, say Jim Edmonds used to make. And you didn't see Andrew did lay out sometimes, of course. But most of the time, Andrew, like last night with Michael Harris, was his routes and his instincts are so incredible. And the speed was so good that Andrew usually got to balls and was underneath them that 9 out of 10 other guys would be diving for and still might not catch, obviously. But, yeah, the difference in laying out and making the highlight reels, Michael Harris isn't interested in that. Neither was Andrew. And, that catch last night, even though he didn't lay out for it in right center field, was as good as you're going to see in the majors this year, I think, other than, you know, some guy going 5 feet over the wall to rob a home run. But just as far as difficulty of the catch, man, it doesn't even show up metrically as difficult as it was, because, you know, his speed is so good and he got to it and caught it on the run. But it was phenomenal. And he made another catch coming in last night that was phenomenal. And he's made three or four of those now, that the Andrew catch is coming in, that I just go, wow. People don't realize how hard that catch is.
Yeah, I'm sold on him defensively. You know, I mean, I'd heard everything you'd said and I'd watched him lay out for a few balls and seen him come in a few times, but that getting to that ball last night, it shocked me watching on TV. I didn't think he had a chance at it off the bat, and he ran that thing down.
That's what Snit said. And, that's what Kyle Wright said. It was one of the greatest catches he's ever seen. And
me
Kyle
too.
Kyle said he had turned and was going to back up third base. He thought there's no way he's going to get. He turned and then he said, "I looked over my shoulder and saw, oh my God, he's going to catch it."
Yeah, yeah, that was crazy. All right, we got John W.
Somebody asked about Huascar. He threw 7 no hit innings last night at Gwinnett. By the way, I don't know if you were asking because of that or if you're asking how he's doing, but he threw 7 no hit innings last night. So that's certainly progress for him.
One of the theories I've heard about Duvall was that the center field was beating him up too much, and that may have been affecting him at the plate. Is there any truth to that or any thought of that?
I think there is something to it. Could be wearing him down some because he's a little bigger than your typical, a little older to be that big. There are some bigger center fielders. I mean, Buxton's a big guy, but Duvall's kind of a thick guy, you know, I mean, and I don't mean fat. I mean, he's just thick. He's a muscular guy. He's not built like a center fielder for sure. But yet he runs well enough to play a good center field. And at his age, being diabetic, playing in the heat, it could wear him down for sure. And I think we saw that last year when he was playing every day down the stretch. He was able to do it in the postseason because he get those days off. So it doesn't affect you. And it's cooler that time of the year too. And he played in domes at Houston and blah, blah, blah. But, playing every day, you know, on a homestand in Atlanta at his size. And he's not old, but he's not young. And I think he's better suited. He plays a plus defense in the corners. I think he plays good defense in center. And I think there is something to that. I do not attribute his terrible start to the season to being tired from playing center field. It could affect him. It could affect him some, for sure. But I think he's just struggled at the plate. I don't think it's all attributable to that. Some of it might be. Who knows? I don't think there's any way to measure that.
Do you have any update on Tyler Yates?
He's getting closer. He's on the timetable that they had for him before the season, which was August. You know, they thought that he could join the team in August, and I think they still think that. But he's not had setbacks, any significant setbacks that I'm aware of, and he keeps making progress. But until he gets closer, Snit doesn't really talk about guys until they're real close or they're ready to come back. So, but they still plan, fully intend for him to be back in after the All-Star break.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, we got Sol S. Sol, what's up?
Hey, guys, how you doing? A couple quick things. First of all, just a follow-up on the Michael Harris thing. What a great addition he has been to the outfield. It's kind of fun. Early in the season, literally the ball hit the outfield, I kind of hold my breath.
Yeah.
And with him and Acuna out there, it's just a calming effect. It totally reminds me of Andrew Jones, like you're talking about. Just a quick question, though, on Dansby Swanson. I know a lot of people wonder the chances of re-signing Dansby and stuff like that or looking elsewhere. It appears to me, I mean, just from the eye test, I mean, going back a couple of years now, even with Freddie, when Freddie was the unofficial captain on the team, it seemed like Dansby, to me, he seemed like a captain on the field. And I wonder if the Braves are maybe considering letting him go. Does that mean, I mean, the Braves might be looking at another kind of public relations hit, you know, with the whole thing with Freddie letting him go. I mean, because I think Dan, he seems like he's a leader in the clubhouse. I mean, is that not the case?
He is the captain of the infield, that's for sure. And Austin Riley said it in the story that I wrote a couple of days ago. He said he's the captain of the infield, especially with Freddie gone. But it's easier for the captain of the infield to be the shortstop anyway. You know, I mean, he runs the show. The guys up the middle run the defense and are the most important defenders. With Freddie there, it was a little different. I mean, obviously, but Dansby is the captain of the infield now. And yes, he's a leader in the clubhouse. They don't have a really outspoken type, loud leader in the clubhouse. But Dansby's one of those guys that leads by example and such a stable guy and is always there to offer advice to the young players and older players too. So he certainly is one of the, if you had to point to two or three guys in the clubhouse, he is certainly one of them. And, you know, we talked about this in the last podcast. I love Grissom, the shortstop prospect coming up. He could be a couple years away, though. And I loved Langoliers coming up, and I was shocked when they traded him. So, but these things have a way of working out. And as Eric is one to kind of keep me grounded sometimes and not getting too hyped over prospects because so many of them don't work out that you think are sure things, you know? I mean, we thought Pache was a sure thing. I honestly, after seeing him in the NLCS, his bats were professional, and I thought he was pretty much a sure thing. I thought he would hit at least well enough with his defense to be a real good major leaguer. Well, so far we've been proven wrong on that, so we'll see. Grissom, to me, looks really good as a shortstop, but again, it could be a couple of years away. Dansby's a sure thing because he is what he is, and he's a really solid major league player and is above average player now because his defense is has gotten better and better and better to the point where he's top two or three in baseball in defense at shortstop, which is arguably the most important position on the field.
I agree with that. And not only that, if you look at his numbers last year, I mean, he was a top tier in shortstops in the league and his offensive numbers too. I mean, the guy can hit. I mean, yeah, he's streaky as all hell, but he can hit. He's, you know, 27 home runs last year.
And there's still hope that he can be less streaky too, because he's still developing as a hitter. And right. There's no reason to believe that when he goes through these month long stretches where he's on fire, there's no reason to believe that he can't kind of even that out over, you know, with a little more experience and figure some things out and not and shorten these slumps that he has, because most guys, as they get to be his age and with 6 years in the big leagues, do learn to kind of shorten out those slumps some where they're not for 3 and 4 weeks at a time. But you can win, and we don't have to say this hypothetically. You can win theoretically that he can win. You can win a championship with him as your shortstop. They did win a championship.
Yeah,
shortstop. Right. Not only that, but he was a huge contributor to that championship. So I'm in the re-signed Dansby camp, and I haven't always been because his offense has been kind of poor at times. But just watching him on a daily basis, especially with Freddie gone. And yeah. Watching the player he's become, not to mention just the person that he is, what he means for your team. You can't, like I said last podcast, you can't just keep lopping off guys from the culture and expect to keep adding guys and never disrupt it. You've right. gotten away with it so far with Freddie to a degree. You know, you're a lesser team without Freddie, but Olsen is a great guy and the one guy you could have got to replace him. I don't know that you can just get another guy without, because if you're going to replace Dansby's production defensively, and get a better offensive player, you're going to have to spend twice as much as you probably might have to spend to re-sign Dansby. Assuming Dansby would re-sign for a reasonable rate, which I, you know, with his agent, you don't know.
Well, that's what got me thinking that, because I mean, it seems like no one would admit it, of course, you know, on camera, but it seems to me like at least the first 2 months of season struggles could at least in some degrees be contributed to that leader in the, you know, of the team being gone and the team kind of reassessing itself and finding their way.
Oh, there's no doubt that Freddie's absence has contributed to them taking a while to get going. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. And Olsen has done, you know, he's pretty much lived up to all the potential. You know, I know he had a slump too, and that can be totally attributed to switching, not just teams, but switching leagues, coming home, playing the other side. I mean, there's a lot of in the pressure of doing that, but now he's playing like he's supposed to play. But cool. Freddie is the most consistent player on the team. I mean, and one of the two or three best players in baseball overall. And I think, of course, they've missed Freddie so far. Not to mention with runners in scoring position, Freddie's a beast. Duvall is too, but he hasn't done that this year. So when you don't have either of the two guys that led the team in that category last year, it hurt.
Yep.
Cool.
Thanks, Cole.
Yep.
Christopher H.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah.
My question was, with Colin McHugh going down with COVID, is there any concern with the protocols that that potentially could spread to other players? And, you know, because we've seen it with other teams, they've had issues with, you know, COVID spreading throughout the team and then knocking out a bunch of the guys on the roster.
I think there's always a concern. The Braves have proven to be better than almost every other team in that they lost nobody during the protocol. When teams were having to postpone games, Braves didn't have to postpone any because of their own guys. And they were one of the few teams that didn't. We saw teams lose whole series because of that. Cardinals, Marlins, a lot of teams were going through that. So I don't think that they've slipped in their protocols. I just think they're at the stage now where teams aren't having to wear masks and all that, that it's really easy for a guy to test positive, even if he's not very symptomatic. I think Colin has some symptoms, which is why he called it in. And he tested positive. But I mean, we all know in your daily life, you can't be in a bubble unless you're in a bubble, unless they're doing, and they're not playing in a bubble right now. So you are going to have interactions, and he's got two little kids too. So it's really easy for somebody to test positive, even if they're vaccinated. So I'm not really worried about it yet. If it happened to a couple more guys, I would be, but as long as it's just one guy testing positive and only missing a couple of days, like last year, Nuke missed a couple of days. I don't think anybody really noticed because he wasn't very good. But and Colin McHugh is a huge piece of the bullpen, so he gets sick and people or he gets COVID and people understandably are concerned. But you know what I mean? It's really easy for one guy to get it. It's not a big deal as long as they do it right, keep him away from the team. And I will add that yesterday in the clubhouse for the first time all year and for the first time since last year when they let us in there, the PR staff, because one of them tested positive on the road trip, the PR staff, the trainers, and all of them had masks on yesterday. Only people that did not are the players who are tested like all the time.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Victor M.
I was just curious about like Strider's second start versus his first start. He had been throwing the changeup more in the D-backs game, but you know, the Colorado effect might have hurt his slider. I was wondering what his feel was for his changeup. And then how do you evaluate that? And then what do you think about him being the fifth starter long term with Soroka coming back after the All-Star break?
Well, I don't look at that start with I don't put too much weight on anything that happens for a pitcher in Colorado. You know, he didn't use his changeup much in that start, which was a good it was a good pitch for him in that start against the Diamondbacks.
That kind of surprised me.
Well, you know, you can throw a changeup in normal air and it does what it's supposed to, and then you can go throw it in Colorado and it cuts 3 feet. And so it might have just been a situation where he didn't feel like he could control that pitch.
Right.
And had not to mention he hasn't thrown it a ton, so it could be a day where you don't have feel for it in general. And you combine those two factors, you know, kind of an off day with it, and then Colorado's air. It's really easy to just ditch that pitch and go back to what you're comfortable with. And the same thing with his fastball control. You know, it's so strange when you throw balls in Colorado, they don't do what they're supposed to. You know, you could throw a sinker and it cuts. So it's like driving on the other side of the road or sitting on the other side of the car when you're driving. You know, I mean, there's just this huge lack of comfort. And in a Colorado start, you just try to get through it and figure out what you have that day and battle. And I didn't think he did a terrible job of that. And obviously his velocity was still there. But I'd look more forward to his next start to really try to evaluate him as a starter and see if he has that changeup again or what he can bring. And anything that happens in Colorado is just, as a pitcher, you're just glad it's over.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. But he'd thrown less than 10 changeups before that start at Arizona. So if he's throwing that changeup in a bullpen and it's not going where he thinks he can command it or, you know, have
just
any
forget it.
Yeah, he might have just said, screw this. I'm not coming. This is my third pitch, and I've just honed it in the offseason in normal conditions, so I can't throw it here and be comfortable with it. Yeah, so I didn't really think about that. But I don't know, man. I think they face first, we got to see what Soroka does when he comes back. He's throwing 93, 95 right now off the mound, though, what I'm told. So that's a real good sign. Obviously, there's still a huge difference in getting in games when he hadn't done it in about 2 years and facing hitters. So. But if he comes back and you got the current four that are obviously locked in, if he comes back in the second half and he's ready to go and they don't feel like, you know, a couple of guys need extra rest down the stretch, you know, like Soroka, if they think he could use it or Charlie, you know, at his age and all that, if they don't think they need a guy extra rest and having six guys in there, because you have off days, normal off days in the second half, I would almost feel like you could get more impact and more games from Strider in the role that he had before going to. And I know it gets everybody excited with that first start because it was terrific, but man, he was so effective in those two inning relief stints or one inning and he could be used in high leverage situations. So I think it kind of depends on what we see with Matzik when he does come back, when Yates is ready, what he offers. But down the stretch, if you have Soroka and he's going and he's ready and he's going well and he's solid in that fifth starter spot, I think you have to consider moving Strider back to the bullpen role, depending on what you get from other guys.
What do we think about Jacob Webb coming back, how he's been doing? And then also Charlie Morton has been, you know, struggling. He has a pretty high ERA so far this season. Is he addressing that? What exactly is going on with him, even though he's been, you know, toughing it through some of the outings recently?
Well, I mean, of course he's addressing, and he's 38 years old. He's been around a long time. There's not really anything that, you know, the pitching coach is going to be able to. I mean, it is what he is. I mean, Charlie, after that first inning in Colorado, was pretty damn good. So I didn't think he was going to be able to make it through the first inning. He goes 41 pitches. I thought it was a pretty terrific outing considering how bad that first inning was. And he figured something out and got his command, because after that, he couldn't throw a strike in that first inning. He could not find the zone. He couldn't command his fastball. But he ended up having a decent outing. They won the game. And I don't think that's a real big issue with Charlie. He's 38 years old. I mean, he's not got, last year he had an incredible season for someone his age, or just about anyone, really. But as far as he addressing it, there, nobody works harder than that dude. Nobody prepares more than that guy. So he is doing everything possible. It's been weighing on him. I mean, his bad starts were weighing on him. He talked for 30 minutes afterwards about how bad, you know, things were going and how bad he felt about it and how he's disappointed in everybody. And so, yeah, he's not a concern. If there's any way for him to get turned around, he will. And he's obviously addressing it. As for, what was your other question? I'm sorry. Oh, Webb was pitching pretty poorly in the minor leagues before they got him back. But, you know, coming back here with the pitch coach staff here, they have a good track record with him. They just want to see what they can get. They didn't have to give up much to get him. They needed a guy to fill in. So we'll see. If he comes in and does something while he's got an opportunity, then he'll stay. If not, then he won't. But they're not hanging a whole lot of on that acquisition. They didn't have to spend much to get him back. But we've seen some good stuff from Webb early on. He hasn't been able to recapture that rookie form that he had. But we know he's tough. We know he's fearless. And if the pitching coaches here can help him get back where he was, he can help this bullpen, because they're battling with a lot of guys down right now, or several guys down. Has Soroka gone to Florida yet? Somebody asked. Yes, he has. He went Sunday. I don't think he started pitching in games yet, but I will check today to make sure. Let's take one
Robert
more question.
C. Pick
one
out. Robert, what's up?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
I know it's a lot more fun these days. Last time I was on, we were talking about Snit and his patience, and how it was a rare thing these days. You know, Madden and Girardi and everybody else is a testament to that. But one guy is Adam Duvall, and we all know how streaky Adam Duvall can be. But still, I mean, there's a lot of Braves fans who wanted to drop him off a cliff these first 2 months, and none of us were loving it. But I got him down for about 35 RBI for the next couple of months until he cools off again. What'd you guys think? What's he going to do the rest of this season?
Why do you have him down 35 RBI in any particular
reason? Oh, well, what was the stretch he did? I think it was.
Oh, I'm not saying he can't do it, but I'm just saying, is he done? Has he?
Oh, well, he's getting hot. And I think there was a stretch. I want to say it was either 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, he's
where he just went on a tear, and yep, he had like 15 home runs.
That was during the pandemic year. He was phenomenal. Yeah. He was phenomenal. Remember, he had like a 5 home runs stretch in 3 games, something like that.
Yeah, crazy. He carried us.
Yeah, he can carry an offense when it gets hot, no doubt. And he's got a nose for the RBI, as Snit says.
Well, and I think that's, you know, I mean, you know, you keep with a guy, you don't make him uncomfortable, is what we were talking about last time. But, you know, Atlanta is such a funny town. 6 games not going to, you know, make the difference either. We got to keep it going, of course, you know, and everybody's got us penciled in for another championship.
You can't base it on Colorado, what he did in Colorado, and facing Chacin, who he's got incredible numbers against Chacin. So we'll see. I mean, he should be back in the lineup tonight. He was just out with triceps cramps last night. I don't know, man. I guess it says something to be how big he is that he had triceps cramps.
Well,
you don't get too many of those, Dave.
No, I don't get triceps cramps, man, from writing. But I love Adam Duvall, man. He's a great dude. And I really hope he gets it going again, because when he's hot, the guy can really, really hit, take a middle of the order spot and drive in so many runs. He hasn't been on one of those runs yet this year, but we're 1/3 of the way in. Good thing for him is there's not a lot of pressure on him yet. Now, when they get Rosario back, that's going to change. But that could be another month. We don't know when Rosario's going to be back yet. He is shagging balls in the outfield, but there's no timetable yet for his return. But until he gets back, there's really not a lot of pressure, because as much as Contreras is a terrific hitter, he's not an outfielder. And it's hard to get him acclimated in the outfield, as we saw in the middle of the season. They sent him out there, and the first inning, the ball's hit to him. Ball finds you, as they say. And,
yep.
And his defense is below average, well below average as an outfielder.
Well, I mean, that'll be a good problem to have, Dave. And we're going to need it because, like, we know that Adam is streaky. And sometimes, you know, we're going to need to, you know, have somebody else slot in.
So he's going to need to produce between now and when Rosario gets back. He's going to need to go on one of those runs that he has.
Well, you know, Denver is Denver, but it also can help a team, you know, just get that little spark.
Oh, no doubt for the team. The Colorado sweep was huge, man. I mean, it's huge. Nobody goes to Colorado and sweeps four games. I was talking to Kenley Jansen about it last night because he did it. He went three times a year with the Dodgers. He goes, man, that just don't happen, man. Crazy things happen at Coors Field, and teams don't sweep four games from there. So he was
ever
there.
Loving it. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, guys. We really appreciate it. This has been cool.
Yep, we'll do it again.
755 is real.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.